You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Trees, mountains, a curious kittadu.
It's time for the Green Desk on 95BFM.
Welcome back to The Wire. We've got the Green Desk now, and on today's Green Desk, we have part two of a special on the state of Wellington, recorded down in the capital inside Parliament's Cafe. If you've read the news in the last month, the capital is being buffeted by gnarly headwinds, not off the Cook Strait, but rather from a pesky employee working from home, or rather, a lot of them. But are sunny days ahead from Wellington, for Wellington? Here's reporter Jack Marshall.
Wellington. Can't beat it on a good day. But it's freaky to fly into, and all of its pipes seem to be exploding. I don't know, Wellington's crazy. So the Green Desk caught up with Joel McManus, the Wellington editor for the spin-off. And we caught up with him, and the conversation was so good that we spoke to him for 20 minutes. But that was too long for radio, so we cut it in half, and this is part two. Better than the Joker. Speaking to him live from Wellington at the time in Parliament. Here's my chat with Joel McManus. So on my walk to Parliament today, walking down the Golden Mile, obviously you just see pipes or water just coming out of the ground. It's something you hear in the news, but it's something kind of surprising when you actually get to Wellington. You're like, oh yeah, the ground is seeping water from like the pipe infrastructure. Can you give us a kind of quick blow-by-blow of what's happening? And I know this is, it's kind of probably like the most boring topic, but it's actually probably the most expensive and important. So what's the kind of state of play at the moment, and what's happening in the future?
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. You see drinking water pipes just kind of randomly leaking onto the road constantly. You have certain issues with stormwater pipes, obviously, when it rains heavily. We tend to get wastewater in the harbour a lot, although, you know, a lot of cities get that. It's one of those, like, immense problems, because the pipe network has been underfunded for decades. Like, there was a big investigation into it that basically just looked back and was just like, oh, yeah, year after year after year, the council just wasn't putting enough money into it. And it's kind of because, like, voters wanted lower rates and no one notices the pipes because they're underground, so eh. But it got to this point where Wellington Water, who obviously oversees the water, didn't even know the state of their network. They didn't even know where their pipes were. We were getting situations where pipes were breaking and they were going, oh, we didn't know we had a pipe there. Like, at one point, I was sitting in a meeting where, you know, they were being questioned, saying, okay, well, how much of the network have you assessed? And they said 10%, we think, but they didn't know for sure because they didn't exactly know how big the network was. Because some of these pipes were put in the grounds in the 1800s or whatever. Like, we don't have particularly good records of them. So it's just this enormous thing to fix. Right now, one of the things that Wellington hasn't done that seems like the obvious solution is to have what Auckland has, and is to have separate water rates. Right now water is just part of the council budget, and it kind of just gets wrapped into all the larger rates, and so it tends to get cut when people don't, you know, want to fund it, or, you know, there's always a trade-off about water or something else. Right now, there's a reform underway with Wellington Water to kind of reinvent the organisation, probably give it more power, create some sort of region-wide entity, separate from the previous government's three water reforms, but along the same lines. And at this point, that's probably the solution has to be somewhere in that ballpark. I don't really see that you could continue as status quo as it just being council run, funded by rates. There needs to be some kind of new solution, but I couldn't tell you exactly what.
Yeah, I mean, how do you fix like 100 years of broken pipes that no one knows about? It's bonkers. But I mean, the fact that we live in Auckland and we pay for the amount of water we use, and Wellington is one of these last holdouts of, you know, you can just use it up and no meters at all. So seems like a sensible thing to do. And then finally, what I want to talk about is the tunnels that are being proposed. The first one that comes to mind is the one under Victoria, so one for cars, public transport maybe. And then there's the other mind-boggling tunnel from, I think, Simeon Brown. It's like extending the motorway to Kilburnie or something like that, which is going to cost $100 billion, maybe $5 trillion. Like, it just seems insane. What's happening with these two tunnels? Is either of them likely to happen?
There will be a tunnel. I think there is a general consensus across Parliament that there needs to be a second Mount Victoria tunnel, technically a third, because if you count the bus tunnel. You know, there has been a lot of back and forth under the previous government. The second one was going to be for cars, and they were going to turn the current one into like public transport and just walking and cycling priority. The current government just wants them both to be for cars. And then kind of there still hasn't been an answer settled on. And then one that Simeon Brown has thrown out just recently is the long tunnel, which is the same project. He's just saying, well, if we're going to go under Mount Victoria, why don't we go under the whole city, connect the terrace tunnel directly to Kilburnie, which is a... yeah, it would be the longest road tunnel ever built in New Zealand. No one, I think, has even dared to put a number on it. It was considered in the early days of Let's Get Wellington Moving and basically laughed out. They were like, well, that's just not possible. The benefits are... there are some benefits. You know, it would obviously speed up trips between the airport and the outer regions. For commuters from the south coast getting into the centre city, it would mean the highway's not directly crossing you, so it's probably a little bit easier to run some bus lanes in there. But certainly the benefits don't appear to justify the costs from what we've seen. At least in terms of city development and kind of getting commuters into town, I mean, I would certainly say if you're going to invest billions of dollars, your priority should be connections to and from the city, whereas this just bypasses the city entirely. I mean, I really don't know what happened. I think the minister made a mistake by buying into this. I think this is an idea that has been tossed around. There's a few transport consultants. I've talked to some actually quite smart people who are intrigued by the idea, so it's not totally crackpot, but he clearly got very excited by the idea, commissioned a business case at, you know, over $1 million just to do some reports, and now they're kind of continuing to look into it. I suspect it's kind of just going to end up being a bit of egg on his face, because I can't see any situation where this comes back saying, yes, it's possible, and certainly not any situation where a future government, you know, a future Labour government would continue the project unless it's already like halfway done. You know, these things have been done in other cities. Boston did, they called it the Big Dig. They did a somewhat similar like tunneled under the city, and it, you know, there's some nice parks there now, like it had some benefits, and sort of, you know, if you look at it in isolation, yeah, you know, it would mean sort of the back of Te Aro could have a lot more apartments, that sort of thing, but it's just kind of, is it even possible?
And New Zealand has a terrible record of building tunnels under the ground, like the Central Rail Link in Auckland is like 10 times over budget or something like that. And then what's happened is because there's no, you know, pipeline of work, all these like specialists have just left the country. So we kind of have to start from the beginning again. But kind of wrapping up, how do you feel about Wellington going forward, maybe the next year into the next kind of 3 years? Because it feels like we're finally getting out of this blip, as you said, you know, interest rates coming down, maybe the city kind of comes back to life, or is it going to kind of limp along a bit? What's your predictions? Any hardcore predictions you've got?
Earlier this year, Wellington passed a new district plan, which I spent 2 months covering just that one story, because I genuinely think it's like the most significant thing the city, the most significant decision the city has made in our lifetime and probably will for the next couple of decades. You know, there was a complete change to housing rules that, you know, is going to enable apartments and townhouses in places right where right now it's essentially illegal to build them. Well, not right now anymore, but so that is a huge opportunity, because the one thing that will really turn things around for Wellington is more people living in the city, higher total population, but specifically more people living in town, because that's what will give vibrancy to those streets, more customers for those businesses, and, you know, really create economic impact. So, I mean, that's the big thing. Just get more houses built, and it's, you know, you change the law and that's one thing, then you've got to get the developers on board and make it viable for them. But we're starting to see progress there. So, you know, I don't know how long that will be until we can kind of say significantly there are much more houses than there have been before. But that's like one thing I'm genuinely optimistic about. And sort of the transport network changes with the bike network and the new bus lanes, they support that, because people living in apartments are less likely to own cars. They're going to need alternative forms of transport. That's the kind of stuff that will make the city really leap to that next level. And then at a business level, in terms of basically the economy needs to diversify away from everyone just being public servants. So, you know, you're talking software startups in the city and scientific innovation out in the hut. You know, there's some really cool stuff happening with climate tech, alternative energy sources. Kind of, there's a lot of kind of those small to mid-level startups doing super innovative stuff. And kind of everyone's just watching them going, one of these is going to take off. You know, you kind of spread your bets around and you're like, you know, there's people doing nuclear fission. There's people, you know, having, you know, alternative ways to make zinc, like all sorts of like crazy stuff. And if one of them becomes a billion-dollar unicorn, then that could change the direction of the city, you know, long term. So that's kind of stuff. You know, maybe both of those things are a little more than 3 years, but that's the kind of pathway forward that I see and the reason that I have optimism for Wellington.
That was part two of our special State of Wellington with Spin-Off's Wellington editor Joel McManus. You can find the full interview podcast on the 95BFM website under The Green Desk.
That was The Green Desk on 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.